ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Greg, that is a very fancy microphone, man. You're sounding good.
Very good. It has an arm where the mic dangles from it, like I'm a real radio person.
Yes.
It's very exciting.
Angle is key
to the credibility of any podcast.
That's right. I mean, dangle is a hockey glossary word, so it's appropriate for the show.
Oh, that's right. Wait, what is define dangle for us?
Dangle is when you are skating down the ice and the defenseman's in front of you, and you are putting that puck on a string and deking him out of his skates. You're dangling through the defense, baby.
Yeah, man. I feel like I'm dangling at the edge of a cliff here, Greg, because I don't know anything. Greg, I don't know anything. You know this about me. I'm an ignoramus when it comes to hockey. I don't know what the words mean. I can barely pronounce the names accurately. You are so helpful.
Well, here I am, like a number one goaltender in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I'm here to save your bacon.
This job has some pretty good perks, I gotta admit. I have a short commute, I have a very forgiving bleep button, and this very fancy microphone that I did not have to pay anything for. But one of ESPN Daily's greatest luxuries is that right now, on the brink of the Stanley Cup playoffs, when the NHL is just about to get really good, I get to call up one of the best hockey writers on the planet, Greg Wyshynski, who just comes to my rescue, and today, tells us everything we need to know. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, May 2nd. This is ESPN Daily. Okay, listen. Before you save my bacon and stand on your head, which is the one phrase that I know from hockey, which everybody knows, I think, right? That's the thing where the goalie's really good. Is that right?
That's correct. Also, trying to distract the other team with gymnastics, I think, is also the time when that phrase is used.
Also what I'm doing before I actually ask you a question on this podcast. But here we go. Because look, the NHL regular season is done. The Stanley Cup playoffs are starting tonight. And I guess, how would you summarize, Greg? How would you summarize what some of us may have missed if we were delinquent ignoramuses throughout the NHL regular season?
Well, first of all, the regular season got normal again. Now it's back to the way it used to be, which is four divisions, basic traditional setup, back to the same wild card playoff format they've had since 2014, for better or for worse. But the things you need to know about this regular season, Pablo, are twofold. One, it was really long, and it was long because the NHL built in an Olympic break in February that they didn't really need for the Olympics, it turns out, due to the COVID pandemic, i.e. over 100 postponed games. The NHL opted not to send their players to Beijing. They kept the Olympic break as a time to make up some of these games, but if you have postponed games, it means you have some players that weren't in the lineup because they were in the COVID protocols. And then that led to there being over 1,000 players this season that played at least one game in the NHL. And on the goalie side, we had more goalies play one game in the NHL than we've ever had in a single season. All of this added up to an offensive boom like we haven't seen since 1996 in the league. It was the highest scoring per game average we've had since then, and it benefited a lot of teams and a lot of players, and it was truly one of the most exciting regular seasons for offense that we've had in a very long time.
Wait. So all of these guys, all the replacement players who got called up off the street because people needed healthy bodies to replace the people who could not play, that did not result in great defense, you're telling us.
It did not. Most seasons, we see goaltenders' save percentage gradually get better and better as the season goes on. This season, it's been the opposite. It's gotten worse and worse. And there are a few theories about this. One that I definitely buy into is the last 2 years, have been so mentally and physically draining on these guys because of compacted schedules, because of their routines being interrupted. Don't forget, we had one season start in January. This season's going on to the end of June. Their internal clocks are all messed up.
Greg, whomst among us, Greg? I mean, is there a more relatable explanation for this decline? So I want to drill down here now on the Florida Panthers, because I can't wrap my mind still around how it is that this team wound up being a favorite in the Stanley Cup playoffs. I understand that they wound up with the best record now, but this started off extraordinarily differently.
It really did. Now, it started off well. They were undefeated out of the gate. But then head coach Joel Quenneville resigned in late October in the wake of the sexual assault scandal for the Chicago Blackhawks. His former player Kyle Beach reported the sexual assaults. It was covered up basically by the team. And yes. Quenneville eventually had to pay the piper on that and resigned. He was replaced by his assistant coach, Andrew Brunette. Brunette has never been a head coach in this league before. I talked to him early in the season, and being a head coach in the NHL actually wasn't anything he was even thinking of at the time. GM Bill Zito had to make sure he actually wanted to do the job before he gave it to him. But under Brunette, they won 51 of 75 games. He imported a lot of the same systems that Quenneville was coaching. But I think the credit has to be given to someone who is able to shepherd this team through a very tumultuous time early in the season, keep them on course, and get them to the best record that they've ever had as a franchise. They had some great performances. Winger Jonathan Huberdeau, 115 points, the best offensive season the team has ever had. And what I like about the Panthers, Pablo, is they're a great mix between players in their prime and your classic old guys without a cup. 24-year veteran Joe Thornton of the epic playoff
beat.
Former Flyers captain Claude Giroux, whom they acquired at the trade deadline. Like, they've got some absolute big, bold-faced star names on this team that may be a little bit past their prime to go along with players that are absolutely killing it in their prime right now.
And the question of someone's prime, Greg, I mean, it does raise the question immediately about Alexander Ovechkin, right? Because that's who the Panthers are facing. They're getting the Washington Capitals in that first round. And Ovechkin is day-to-day. I mean, look, hockey injuries are just a truly opaque thing to me. And I think also to people in hockey, like, it's described right now as an upper body injury, what Ovechkin's dealing with. What's his status? What would his absence signify?
Well, Ovechkin slid into the boards. He clearly injured his shoulder in some manner.
Ovechkin with a steal. Comes in on the breakaway. To the backhand. He missed the net. It rolled off his stick, and Ovechkin is hurt.
They kept him out of the last couple games of the regular season. Now, as of Sunday morning, he was taking full skating practice in Washington before their playoff series. I think the anticipation is that he's going to play. I mean, we've talked about it before, Pablo. He is a Russian machine.
Yes, he does not break.
Does not break. So I think he'll play. Whether he'll be 100%, who knows? I remember talking to some of his teammates for a story I wrote earlier this season for ESPN.com about his chase of the Wayne Gretzky goals record. And they all said the same thing, which is, we have no idea how banged up this guy has been during portions of his career because he just produces all the time. And so playing through pain, playing through injury, nothing new for Alex Ovechkin. But I will say this, if he's diminished in any way, their goose is cooked, man. Like he has been the team. If Ovechkin can't carry the load offensively in their first round series, I don't think the Capitals have a prayer against the Panthers.
So the team who needs a prayer, the team whose goose seems to be like charred, or at least it has been for decades, is the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we've laughed at them before, we've praised them before, but the facts are as such, right? Haven't won since 1967. No team actually from Canada has won it all since the Canadiens in 93. So what do you make of what Toronto has in front of them without, you know, sounding like a person who, I don't know, has tried to hope for good things before and has only seen pain?
You mean someone who has picked them to win the cup before only to have them go out in the first round? Yes, I've been that
guy.
That's
right.
Multiple times.
On this podcast.
So the interesting thing about the Leafs is, even though they have not won since 67, and even though they have a very, very difficult first round matchup against the Tampa Bay Lightning, I kind of feel like there's a little bit of optimism floating around in Toronto for some reason.
Part of that, dangerous optimism.
It's very dangerous. Like, not plan the parade optimism, but optimism nonetheless. One of the reasons has got to be the season that Auston Matthews had. Now, Matthews just won his second straight goal-scoring title in the NHL with 60 goals. That set a Toronto franchise record. Matthews became the first 60-goal scorer in a decade in the NHL and the first U.S.-born player to hit that mark. So,
well, Greg, the first U.S.-born player to hit that mark, the first man with a mustache that looks like mine to hit that mark, I think.
He's a looker. And a fashion plate at that. One of my favorite photos of Auston Matthews of all time was him dressed in a jacket that made him look like M. Bison from Street Fighter. Go find it on the internet. Yes. It's fantastic.
Yes, love that special moveset.
So the fact that he's been so good, the fact the top line's been so good, the fact that they made a shrewd move at the trade deadline in acquiring Mark Giordano, a defenseman from the Seattle Kraken, like all these things add up to the Leafs kind of being almost favored in their series against the Lightning, which is a crazy thing to say. That said, though, another first-round exit for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we might have to see some serious changes. Their GM, Kyle Dubas, has been there since 2018. If the Leafs go out and won again, it's hard to believe they're going to run it back next year with the same crew and management and the same crew on the ice.
Yeah, in this case, incidentally, M. Bison's best move, Psycho Crusher, also describes the phenomenon of rooting for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, Greg, the people who've been riding high are the Tampa Bay Lightning, and you did not mention them very conspicuously when you gave us sort of your overview of those chalky picks to start this thing. So where do they fit into this whole thing?
So they finished third in their division, and I feel like after two straight Stanley Cups, there were times in which the Lightning just wanted to get to the playoffs. Like the regular, it's really hard after you've won two straight cups, Pablo, to get excited for Ottawa on a Tuesday night. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like they were in cruise control. They were just trying to get back to the playoffs, and now they're in. And they have the Leafs in the first round. It's a very, very interesting series for all the reasons we just listed. But obviously, the most interesting one from the Tampa Bay side, they are trying to become the first team to win three straight Stanley Cups since the New York Islanders in the early 1980s. The difference for the Lightning this time, I think, is a significant lineup change. Their checking line of Yanni Gourde, Blake Coleman, and Barclay Goodrow was an essential part of their back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. Goodrow's with the Rangers, Gourde's with the Kraken, Coleman's with the Calgary Flames. They don't have that line anymore. That checking line they had in the last two seasons was the one that could shut down the opponent's top line and score a goal on them, and that's a tough thing to replicate.
So just so I understand this, Greg, like, so the Tampa Bay Lightning just aren't trying as hard as they could have. This is sort of like a thing we see in the NBA, right, with load management. They haven't been putting the pedal to the metal because they're saving themselves for this specific time of year.
And why not, man? Like, it's been two long playoff runs, granted in truncated seasons, but two long playoff runs nonetheless. And you're talking about a team that's got upwards of 12 guys over the age of 30 that contribute regularly. So, you know, they're a little bit up in age, as I believe the president referenced recently at the White House.
Folks, the victory capped off an incredible run by one of the most well-rounded teams in recent memory. With outstanding players at every level, led by our captain, a Lightning stalwart of 14 seasons. Steve, 14 seasons?
Yep.
You're getting old, man. I don't know. I got to get some advice from Steve about this.
Yeah, Greg, not great when Joe Biden is making fun of you for being old. Just on principle. But okay, hold on. This championship window thing in terms of everyone's time horizon, right? What does the rest of the East look like?
Well, you have two teams that are desperately trying to extend their Stanley Cup championship windows. The Boston Bruins are playing the Carolina Hurricanes. They've eliminated the Hurricanes in two of the last three seasons. They still have a core of Patrice Bergeron, who is a free agent this summer, Brad Marchand, our old friend, David Pastrnak, Charlie McAvoy. They've still got a good group of those players from that core. But the window to win with this group closes ever so slightly as the years go on. The Hurricanes are interesting, by the way. They're one of the better teams in this league, quietly. Actually, they're season standings points were the highest in franchise history, going all the way back to the Hartford Whaler days. But they have one point of concern to the series, which is that Freddie Anderson, their outstanding starting goaltender, was injured towards the end of the season. And I've been told that there's a chance that he could miss a couple of games in this first round series. The other team that is looking to extend their window are the Pittsburgh Penguins, who, of course, won two Stanley Cups back-to-back before the Lightning made it cool.
Yep.
They played the New York Rangers, and their first-round matchup could be the last ride. Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, Brian Rust are amongst the free agents they have this summer. Tristan Jarry, their goaltender, who really carried them for much of the season during a bunch of injuries and lineup absences. He broke his foot late in the season, so he might not be available for the series. Casey DeSmith could be in goal. And they're playing against a Ranger team that knows a thing or two about goaltending, my friend. Igor Shcherbin, know the name. Best
Love
goalie in the
name.
World this season. Igor is the man in the crease. The successor to Henrik Lundqvist is going to win the Vezina Trophy as the best goalie in the league. But they're beyond just being a goalie and nothing else kind of team. Artemi Panarin, Chris Kreider hit 50 goals. They have Adam Fox, who won the Norris Trophy as best defenseman last year. This is your classic matchup of the team trying to extend its championship life versus the team that's just getting into their window to win.
Igor Shcherbin, do I have that right?
Yes.
Igor Shcherbin. Okay, I'm going to keep muttering Igor Shcherbin to myself during this break, but afterwards, Greg, we're going to take a look at the West.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Greg, in your column last week, you kind of cut to the chase on all of this, right? And you created this category under the heading of, quote, "We're afraid to see what happens if they don't win," unquote, referring to a specific group of players who kind of embody what I love about sports, right? That true shame and humiliation is on the line when they play. So who are you thinking of when you wrote that?
Two players in particular. One is Nathan MacKinnon of the Colorado Avalanche. Now, the Avalanche are the team in waiting, the championship team that everybody thinks is going to manifest this year. They're the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. Nathan MacKinnon is one of the single most intense competitors I've ever covered. If you could think about a post-series press conference where a player has that look on his face like he just got beat on a video game by his younger brother and has thrown the controller across the room and just looks sullen.
There's just like a hole in the television where his fist just was.
That's Nathan MacKinnon after these playoff losses, man. This guy takes it harder than anyone I've ever seen. And I'm genuinely afraid to see what would happen if they don't make it to at least a championship round this season. The other guy is Connor McDavid. And obviously McDavid, everybody knows, is probably the most talented scorer in the league right now. 123 points this season, won his 4th scoring title. Only Gretzky, Howe, Lemieux, Esposito, Jagr, and Mikita have 4 or more, and McDavid is just 25 years old. But he's not had playoff success with the Edmonton Oilers. The Oilers have always been a team carried by McDavid and his teammate Leon Draisaitl and their offensive prowess. They've never been a team that's been all that deep. They've never been a team that's had a roster that really says, okay, this team can win the cup. And I do worry what the reaction's going to be if there's anything less than at least a series victory for the Oilers this year, because McDavid is, again, like MacKinnon, an extraordinarily tough competitor.
But it does seem like for MacKinnon and the Avalanche, if they just choke in these playoffs, you're afraid for bystanders, for furniture, for electronics. For McDavid, there is a larger question of, like, how do you actually think of this guy who otherwise has been, like, incredibly special? And so MacKinnon in Colorado, they're taking on the Nashville Predators. McDavid and his Oilers, they're facing the Kings. Who are you actually more afraid for in comparison there?
I'm more afraid for McDavid. The LA Kings are an interesting story. They've had the best prospect pool in the NHL for the last few seasons. And we all assumed that when they made it back to the playoffs, it would be on the strength of those young players. Well, it turns out it's the adults that are doing it this time. It's Anze Kopitar. It's Philip Deneau. Before he got injured, it was Drew Doughty. It was Jonathan Quick, the goalie that led the Kings to two Stanley Cups in the last decade, having a Quickissance this season in goal. And so the only thing I'm worried about here for the Oilers is the idea that the Kings might have a series win in them, and they might have a series win in them if Jonathan Quick decides to pop off and take over the series in goal, which isn't out of the realm of possibility with the way that he's played. Now, Colorado's a beast. Colorado, it would be absolutely shocking if Colorado didn't get out of the first round for one reason, which is that their opponents are the Nashville Predators, who, by the way, are not a pushover. They're a good underdog, but they'd be an even better underdog if their goalie, Juuse Saros, was healthy. You put him in this series, they got a puncher's chance. He's out of the series. This could be a real quick one.
He's out of the series. It just sounds like they're just going to get punched, in other words.
That's right.
So the Calgary Flames, I mean, speaking of an entire country getting punched, I mean, Canada, I want to talk about Calgary in specific here in the Flames, because like Edmonton, I guess we suffer, Greg, we Americans suffer from a bit of ignorance, actually, about like stuff to know about Calgary. But stuff to know about this team involves winning the Pacific Division, having the third highest point total in the West. So where are they in terms of possibly ending Canada's Stanley Cup drought?
All right, quick primer on the Calgary Flames. They got three 40-goal scorers. Matthew Tkachuk, who is, if you love your Brad Marchand-type players, very much of that ilk, a guy that could beat you on the scoreboard or with his mouth or with his stick.
If you like guys who no one else likes, in other words, this guy right. is a guy for you to like.
If you're a fan of the heels, this man is a heel. Elias Lindholm's a great two-way player. He's got 42 goals. And then there's Johnny Gaudreau, who hit 40 goals and had 115 points. He's an American kid, South Jersey kid, free agent. It's going to be a very lucrative summer for Johnny Gaudreau. They also have a goalie in Jacob Markstrom, who's considered to be one of the best in the league, and a coach in Daryl Sutter, who is a man of, well, brief words, but a long storied history of playoff success, including being behind the bench for those recent LA Kings championships. So this is a team that could beat you offensively. They're one of the best offensive teams in the league with a great goaltender. So they are a very, very big threat to win the cup this year and stop that Canadian Cup drought.
Okay, so the Calgary Flames, they get the Dallas Stars, a hell of a matchup there. But the matchup, Greg, that is, I don't know, pretty infuriating if you're either of the teams involved here, it's the St. Louis Blues against the Minnesota Wild, rounding out the rest of the bracket in the West. What do you make of this particular series here?
My heart breaks. I love both these teams, man. They're so much fun. The Minnesota Wild have shed the reputation of being a defensive-oriented franchise and transformed into one of the best offensive and defensive teams in the league, led by Kirill Kaprizov, who's one of the league's most exciting players. The St. Louis Blues have had one of their best offensive seasons since like the early 1990s when Brett Hull was scoring like 80 goals. So yeah. This is a matchup between two incredible teams. In fact, so incredible that by points, the Wild were second in the Western Conference and the St. Louis Blues were fourth. But because of this vacacta playoff format we've got, they got to play each other in the first round. What is that?
Wait. So two things. Number one, what is the adjective you use to describe the playoff bracket? And number two, explain the playoff bracket.
It's Yiddish. Pay it no mind. So the playoff bracket goes like this. The top seeds in each division, they play the wild card teams. The two and three teams in each division have to play each other. So back in the day, if we were in the old 1-8 conference format, right, the Minnesota Wild would be seeded to play the Los Angeles Kings. I think that is a fitting matchup for a team that had the second most points in the conference. The St. Louis Blues would play against the Edmonton Oilers, who were fifth in the conference. And again, that's a much more manageable matchup for the Blues than it is the Minnesota Wild. Losing one of these teams in the first round is heartbreaking as a hockey fan, because I think either these guys could give the Colorado Avalanche a really good series in the next round.
Yeah, I mean, Bupkis, Greg, is what this sounds like. Bupkis.
That's right.
Does that work? Does that work in this context?
Yeah, it's a Shonda, absolutely.
So, Greg, another team that's just vetching right now, just like truly, truly in their feels, right?
Can you tell you moved back to Brooklyn, by the way? you weren't getting all this when I was living in California.
No, this is prime. You are in your prime, Greg, clearly. But the biggest Golden Knights, right? Like, what happened? Greg, what happened to them? Because they're missing the post. And look, I know it's been a short history, but this is the team that I just came to expect them to be awesome every year. But here they are out of the entire playoff picture. The Jack Eichel thing, bringing him in from Buffalo controversially after he had this falling out with the Sabres. We covered that on this podcast with Emily Kaplan about his neck injury. Like, what did go wrong here?
Injuries, I think, would be the number one thing that went wrong. You know, they lost a ton of guys in their lineup at a critical part of the season. Mark Stone, who I think is their best forward, maybe outside of Eichel, if you want to go raw talent. Alec Martinez was out for a while, a key defenseman. And then at the end of the season, Robin Lehner opted to get surgery, so they didn't have him for the last stretch. So they might be able to look at this season and say it was the injuries, but it was also a mess of their own making in the sense that because of their salary cap situation, a situation that was only exacerbated when they acquired Eichel's cap hit from the Buffalo Sabres, they weren't really able to get reinforcements or bring in reinforcements off of long-term injured reserve. When they bought Stone back in their lineup, they were moving around their players on and off long-term injured reserve just to manage the cap. So a lot of these problems are of their own making. But beyond that, I've never seen a team go from being the single most beloved team in the league, like the Golden Knights were when they made the Cup final in their inaugural season as the Golden Misfits, to a team where the vast majority of the National Hockey League's fans were just wallowing in the schadenfreude of the Golden Knights missing the playoffs this year, primarily because of the way they treated their players and primarily because of the way they treated Marc-Andre Fleury, their franchise goaltender, who found out via Twitter that he had been traded to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Ugh.
I just feel like they're a team that got away from their identity. You know, I don't really know. They all grew up and put on ties and started working at the bank. You know, they stopped making music in their garage. And I think when that happens, you lose a little bit of the magic. The pressure starts to build. The expectations start to build. And I don't know. I feel like there needs to be sort of a reassessment of how they approach the game, about how they approach the franchise, and most importantly, how they approach player relations.
Well, Greg, what you're describing is kind of the story of Las Vegas, right? Like, they started off as kind of like this really fun band of scrappers, these rebels, and now, yeah, they're suddenly in these like multi-bazillion dollar residencies, and the people who used to like it are now like too cool for it.
Yes, and also I believe they will chop your fingers off if you cheat against them, is the other thing about the Golden Knights.
Greg, after the break, it's time to make some predictions at risk of getting some fingers amputated.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Shopping for Mother's Day is usually a challenge because you people wait until the last minute. But Macy's Gift Finder makes it incredibly fast and easy to find the right gift just in time for Mother's Day. Whether you're shopping for your sister's first one or for your fashionista mom who likes to make a statement, Macy's Gift Finder has so many great gift ideas that you can easily pick out something special to celebrate with them both. You can shop by price anywhere from $25 and under to, say, $100 and below. You can also sort by category like fragrance, handbags, and more, or gift lists like for the mom who has everything, or even pre-wrapped gifts for grandma. Find top brands like Studio Pro Model Beats headphones, Polaroid cameras, and Samsung smart TVs. So, what are you waiting for? Mother's Day is May 12th, and it'll be here before you know it. Macy's has the perfect gift guide to make picking something for mom easy this year. head to Macy's.com/giftfinder today. That's Macy's.com/giftfinder.
So, Greg, before we ask you to put your body on the line here, making some picks for us, what is going on with the Arizona Coyotes and their stadium?
The Arizona Coyotes bid farewell to Glendale, which is a city long considered to be one of the reasons why the Coyotes have never been able to really increase their fan base. The team plays in a place where their fans aren't, is the message you always heard from the Coyotes. So now they're going to try to build an arena where the fans are in Tempe. Problem being, they don't have an arena deal yet with the city of Tempe. There's not a shovel in the ground. You can't play in Glendale. They don't want you there. Can't play in an arena that doesn't exist yet. Where do you go? Arizona State University. They're going to play in this arena, 5,000 fans. The tickets are rather expensive, as one could imagine, in order to try to generate any revenue. The rest of the league, not exactly enamored with this idea because, again, they're not going to really bring in all that much money, even though Commissioner Gary Bettman has said that there are certain economic models in which they'll make more money at ASU than they did in Glendale. I've yet to see those. Here's the big problem, though, Pablo. As a one-year lark, I think this could be a ton of fun. 5,000 rabid NHL fans in a college stadium cheering for a team. Like, that could be such a cool atmosphere. It's like an old ECW show, right? Like, it's going to be such fun. But the problem is, because they don't have this arena in Tempe yet, it could be year one, year two, year three. There's an option for year four. So the idea that you're going to
Oh, no, Greg, they're going to be Van Wildering. No one's going to want to leave.
That's right. That's right. 4 years from now, it's the Arizona Coyotes : the rise of Taj. I'm all for this being a temporary thing, but if it goes on for too long, man, it's just not the best look for an NHL team to be playing in a college campus.
So, side note, we need to have you reporting from Arizona State at some point, Greg, next season.
Sir.
Like, you need to be our correspondent explaining how this is going to go.
Sir, if you don't think that I have already put fingers on keyboard keys and slacked my editor to say, game one, ASU, Wyshynski's there. You underestimate me, sir. I will be there. I will be your man on the ground.
Need you to embed at a, you know, just, yeah, we need, I like the expense report for that. Just like ping pong balls.
That's right. What are red cups? Oh, don't worry about it.
Greg, why, how, you, Monster Energy drinks? Oh, God. And so, Greg, here we are, right? We abide by the college aphorism. You know, we do our picks at the very end, kind of like, you know, you do beer before wine. And so what is your crystal ball telling you after years of it absolutely betraying us?
All right. On ESPN.com right now, I have the full bracket written out, like March Madness style. Every playoff series, the winners, how many games. Spoiler warning, it's obviously what's going to happen, so read it at your own risk.
You put in so much work into this. Yes, it is an incredibly detailed, comprehensive document that we will now boil down to this.
All right, here we go. Ready? Bruins beat the Canes. Penguins beat the Rangers. Panthers beat the Capitals. Maple Leafs beat the Lightning. Panthers beat the Leafs. Bruins beat the Penguins. Panthers win the East.
Ooh.
West. Avalanche over Predators, Wild over Blues, Flames over Stars, Oilers over Kings, Flames over Oilers in the Battle of Alberta. Wild upset the Avalanche, Wild upset the Flames, Panthers Wild in the Stanley Cup Final. Two teams, by the way, that have never won the Cup before, and the team that brings home the chalice for the first time is the Florida Panthers, and we're going to see Joe Thornton dip that beautiful beard in the bowl of the cup and come up all sudsy.
I can only imagine the city of Miami, Greg, the Florida Panthers hometown, them celebrate, just the utter depravity of that celebration.
Are you trying to say that you think that there might be a better celebration of the cup on South Beach than on a Minnesota lake? Is that what you're trying to infer with that Stanley Cup final?
Greg, I am but a meek outsider to hockey culture. But yeah, as always, I hope that you're right, and very much am afraid that you're wrong.
Well, Pablo, you're talking to a man that never gets it wrong, as I selected the New York Islanders to win the Stanley Cup before the season, a team that, as you can tell from this podcast, did not qualify for the playoffs at all.
Yeah, Greg, I want to update my metaphor here. I'm not dangling from a cliff, seizing your outstretched hand. I realize that we're both base jumping together. So, as always, thank you for doing this.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.